Well, I'm really pleased to make somebody to the show who I went to see a play the other night, and I was sitting there and basically watching and saying, who the hell did this play? it was one of these plays that actually just grabbed me. It just grabbed me and held on to me for the entire time. And I was really pleased to be able to bring to the show Oliver Mayer. And that's, I'm pronouncing that right?
Perfectly.
Okay. And Oliver is the writer of the play. And so you gave birth to that, right?
Yes, I did. gosh, it feels really good.
Well, tell people what it's about first, actually.
Sure. I wrote a play in the 90s called Blade to the Heat, which was a life changer for me. And I think really a lot of people remember. I'm really glad about that. It had a dynamism to it that just was a little bit different from other plays. And it dealt with sexual behavior, sexual identity in the world of boxing, which a lot of people hadn't thought about. Because, I don't know, there isn't a lot of difference, you know, at least publicly. Everything is the same. They're all male. They're all tough. They're all strong. And so I looked at difference in that world, and I set the play in an extreme moment in the 50s when Liberace was straight. You know, whatever Liberace was, he could be nothing other than straight.
Yeah.
And so my professional fighter, my world champion, my Chicano, who makes it to the big time in New York, Pete Quinn, becomes champion and then suffers over an outing. There's another fighter who outs him, and it leads to tragedy. So 22 years later, here we are with Members Only. This is at the Latino Theater Company. And 22 years later in my life, I revisit my surviving characters. So the people in their mid-20s are now approaching 50. And they've made their separate ways. And Quinn, the former world champion, is still fighting at that age, which is a very dangerous thing to do. And Quinn, who had been so marked by being other than straight in the 50s, in the early 80s in New York, can live what we would call a gay lifestyle. That doesn't mean he's out, but it does mean that he has a life. There's a new generation of people who look a lot like we do in 2018, who have a lot of opportunity to be themselves, whatever that may be, not binary, and can try lots of new stuff. There's a woman who wants to fight, and that was a big deal in the 80s. The thing that no one realizes is that they're standing on the edge of a precipice, and the AIDS virus has not been named yet, but is beginning to take people. And that is part of this play as well.
And there's so much. I mean, that precipice is actually a really, it's long, if not wide, but it's really long in terms of what, you know, the kind of thing that you have there where, I read where you boxed when you were a kid.
I did.
And I did too. And,
oh, cool. That's what happened to our faces.
Right. Faces and brain. You got a little bit of a tilted brain after that. But it was sort of, you know, it's interesting because when I saw that, what you brought to the stage in this, and I saw the original play as well, and what you brought to the stage in all this was, you know, it wasn't the kind of thing, even when having boxed, you know, I didn't look at myself as even like a human when I was boxing. You were somebody who was going, you were going into fight and you were going into win. You know, and what you did with this was so important in terms of, yes, all the things that you're talking about, this guy who's gay and doesn't want to put it out and and there's all this stuff going on in the world, but there's also this thing of, he's somebody who clearly cares about the world and about other people. And, you know, it's just, and so he's sitting in there, and it's such a step back from what people normally think of in terms of boxing and the whole fight, you know, whole fight scene. And I thought that was really, it was really important because you then began to peel away all these layers and dig into the actual human experience of these people that were in the play, which I thought was really, really important.
Thank you, Michael. Yeah, it's my intention. I think we look at celebrity, we look at athletes, and we see what they do. And we forget that they're like we are. And we forget they have politics. And boy, we forget they have personal lives. That they would protect above all things if they could. I like to say that Quinn in this play is a lonely warrior. He did not necessarily want any of the fights beyond the fight game that he has to pick up to protect this young woman from the bullying and the gym and the harassment and worse that could happen to her. That's part of this play. Much less all of this mantle around homosexuality. It's the last thing he wants. And yet he's all alone and no one else is going to do the fight. And actually, you know, this is a fiction in the 80s, there was nobody like Pete Quinn. I had to invent it. That's kind of sad.
Wow, yeah. Wow, that's amazing. One thing I wanted to ask you before we get really deeper into the whole thing actually the way it was staged. I had to ask you about this because, you know, there's that sort of almost like Egyptian or, you know, whatever it is, this kind of movement of the people when they're walking across the stage and when they're going off the stage and coming onto the stage, this whole grouping of people that actually brought you to a whole different place because you're watching this and you're thinking, wait a minute, what the hell is this? Where's it coming from? But it was really, you know, I kept watching and I kept thinking, and eventually I was like, this is really cool. This is really bringing something. And I wasn't quite sure what it was bringing to it, but it was actually, in terms of the atmosphere and what was going on, it was very heavy to see this very ordered march. And in the midst of this, like, actually, you know, as we both know, boxing can be a very brutal and ruthless and even when you have rules, the rules often bend quite easily. But then you're seeing this movement, this dance movement as people go on and off the stage. I was really, really, you know, intrigued by that.
Our mutual friend, Jose Luis Valenzuela, that is his brilliance. And the Latino Theater Company that he's been with for 30 years has found a kind of a language, a gestural language. And that's part of it. We put this play up pretty fast, and I will admit that, I don't know, 10 days in, we took a whole rehearsal to just kind of find our physical life, our gestures, and I'm like, oh man, we don't got enough time for this, but I knew. I didn't say anything because I knew how important it would be. We listened to music. We found it in our bodies. We realized that, I know this from a long career, that I write a lot of scenes that hopefully add up to something. But the transitions between them, the cartilage that joins them, is as or more important. And that was all Valenzuela. So you got a really good friend there.
Yeah. It's really interesting. It puts you into the middle of something that you don't really expect to be in the middle of.
Well, we should probably say the play is set in 1982. Mm-hmm. And if people remember the 80s, the music of the 80s is all around us when we're stuck in traffic and all that FM radio. But, you know, it was pretty awful, a lot of it. But I think I found a couple of really good cuts that really give us a sense of maybe how it might have felt. I deal with a little bit of Laurie Anderson, mm-hmm. Willie Colon, and the Fania salsa. And also the Death of Disco with Donna Summer, which is, disco never dies.
I have mixed feelings about that. But I was really impressed by the music. I thought that actually brought something big to it. And also the young woman that you had in the play, she was a remarkable character. I mean, because she is going through all of the things that the guy who's actually the protagonist in the play. I mean, you're looking at this, and it's sort of, I don't know. I mean, it got me because it's sort of, she wants to be a boxer.
Yeah.
But she doesn't want all the bull that goes with it, but she's not going to give in to any of that, but she's going to stand her ground. But the person who actually brings her forward is somebody who boxes and boxed and loved it, but also hated it at the same time in a certain way. But it was, and I thought the relationship between the two of them was really, really interesting.
He sees a kindred spirit. In the first play, he was shunned by the boxing community, and actually they wished him ill. And here he is coming into a gym and seeing a woman all alone without anyone to protect her, and really in a great deal of danger. And as you say, kind of not giving any quarter. And he realizes that he has something to do. In a certain way, she's like a daughter to him. And he protects her as long as he can. You've seen the play, so you know that stuff comes up that makes it very difficult to keep protecting her. And in the end, we know this, whether we're our brother or sister's keeper. Sometimes it's a little up in the air. We do the darndest we can to try to help each other, but sometimes the world intervenes.
What about the other woman in the play?
Well, that's my wife, Marlene Forte.
I was just going to give you a little chance there.
So, funnily enough, when I wrote the first play, Marlene was starting out her career in New York, and she's, of course, had a fabulous TV and film career. She's a wonderful stage actress, but she couldn't get seen for Blade. So when we got married, she kind of whispered in my ear more than once. She said, look, I want to play that part, but I'm getting too old. And so I figured, well, if I write this maybe a sequel, then maybe she could play the part. And then once I realized I needed, if I were going to write her part, I'd have to write everybody's parts. And this has been the process about 7 or 8 years to just, you use the word layering. They're layers of time, you know, like igneous rock. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. like makeup. It's just one under another, and or like, you know, maybe kind of like a painter might do. And that's how you get texture, and that's how you maybe begin to understand how time really works.
There's another thing in the play that gets to me, too, which is the basically, and I was thinking about this for a while, because there's so much heart in it, in all the characters in the story, even the ones that you sort of detest. It's sort of, there's a lot of heart. The bad people are full of heart when they're being bad. And the people who are, you know, just searching for a way, you know, just a way to have some kind of more than a passing connection with other human beings. And that point about the idea that there's, you know, the problem and the joy of having too much heart, which I think is really important in relation to all that. So.
Thanks, Michael. It comes up early in the play that it's a question of heart. It's a question of feeling. And this main character, Quinn, the reason that he deserves a second play and maybe a third before I check out of this this planet, is that he does have so much feeling for his fellow man, despite getting beat on, and not just in the ring. You and I both know that there are worse things than getting punched. That's the best thing about fighting, is he's like, I can take it. You know, of course, there are a couple of blows. You know, you feel them particularly to the body later. But I've been far hurt worse outside of the ring, and so is Quinn.
And hurt, even in terms of when you think about this, the hurt, the emotional hurt that actually people, it's astounding, because this is one thing you bring through the entire play, is the emotional pain that people go through, and no matter what they're doing in their life, there's always, and all of the characters have some form and a deep form of emotional pain that both sets them in motion, but also as part of their basic humanity as well.
I think the audience understands that. And I mean, I have a lot of joy in my life, and I hope people listening do too. But we know it's really hard out there, and people categorize us constantly. You know, whether it's on our darn phones, you know, we go buy something and they tell us what we think we should buy, or that this is fun, pressing buttons, or whatever it might be, that we're being categorized, we're being tribalized, and it's out of our hands a lot of times unless we take it back. And so hopefully plays like this remind people, check people, to kind of remember who their family really is. And maybe even to get in a dark room with people they don't agree with, but to come out of it and realize they went through something together, even if they don't agree. I think Gil, I don't know how you feel about this, but I like to write plays where there's not one way to take it. Well, there's a lot of ways to take it. I don't know how you were with your wife when you left the theater, but I feel like you probably had something to talk about. You mostly agreed, but I bet you saw different things. That's my intention.
No, we agree with everything. All the time, always yes, of course.
As long as you liked it, I'm happy.
We agree on really liking it. But it's interesting, because there is this, I mean, look, I don't know, I was just thinking about this thing. I'm looking at these, you know, things I had written down that I wanted to ask you, but it's actually, there's so much to think about in relation to this play. And, you know, you said that actually in a way that the time was right for this play.
Yeah.
And I think that's really important, but the time was right for the other play, the earlier play, the version too. And it's sort of, you're following along this trail. And I think when you have that divide that developed in the 80s, because it was a very real question that came up, and it really got to me that, one, your character, your lead character is gay and can't tell anybody. And there's all this stuff about, you know, what happens because of that. But it's like this, you have this, you're going into this situation where it is that the time is right. There's time is right for all this. And I'll tell you, it's interesting to me, because I had also worked in BD clinics in the Bronx years and years ago. And, you know, I would see the kinds of things that people, and then I worked I can't remember, the big gay neighborhood in Manhattan. I can't remember what.
West Village or?
Yeah, no, it's a little, anyway, it was West Village, but it was another area, but it was very heavy, because people would come in even there, and there was a real pullback a pullback of like, I'm not going to get stomped on, hurt because I'm gay, because of who I am. But it was also, they would say things like, you know, but I am right, gay, and I'm not going to give up my humanity. And I thought that was one of the things that really comes out in your play, especially, you know, as it develops. And I won't say anything more except that it does come to the fore, the demand that I'm a human being and I demand to be treated as such, you know.
I think that's dead on. I think sexual identity, it's not the only identifier. Obviously, color, ethnicity, race, racial, language, all kinds of things help identify us. But I think our sexuality is a big identifier, and it really belongs to us. Mm-hmm. So those people that you met back in the day, God help them. I hope they're still with us, at least some of them. hopefully they were just taking control of something that they could still grab hold of. Because, you know we can't necessarily affect Washington unless we really, really work for it.
Mm-hmm.
The economy is often very much against us. But at least we have the choice of who we want to be with and how we want to show our love.
Mm-hmm.
But we know it's really dangerous. And that's the thing that AIDS taught us, because it was a moment, I was pretty young as it was beginning, but it was a moment where people were feeling rather free and liberated and feeling, I don't know, even artistic about their lovemaking. And it put the kibosh on it real fast.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe we're in a moment that, if we don't watch out, could be like that. I hope not. But we know that particularly among black and brown communities, AIDS is back.
Yeah. And you know, it's also, I don't know, you know, it got to me because there's also, look, we still, to this day, we still have this massive, even though we have so much more, you know, supposedly so much more understanding, so much more open-minded, but there's still, you know, gay people still get killed for who they love, you know, and AIDS is still seen as like, you know, it's the gay disease, you know, and it's sort of all of these things that, and you put that in conjunction with the monster that we have running the country right now. You know, and what that could mean for all people, and especially for the people that you're writing about, which I thought that also brought it home to me in a big way, the importance of, and you know, you, and I won't say anything because you haven't, not only have you not finished the you made it a trilogy. I'm going to make you stick to that.
I'm going to have to stick to it. Yeah. I'll have to come back on here in a few
definitely,
years and talk about the third play.
Definitely. We'll have you back before that. So I enjoy talking with you. So you're back for one way or another. But you have all of this going on, and it all can, you know, and there's a couple points in the play where you see that this all can either go forward or it can crumble into some very bad things, you know. And that was some of the dynamic that I thought that was really important here. And we have about a minute for you to say something about that.
Well, I think we're all on a tightrope. I mean, the people listening to us, and what I tell everyone out there is don't look up and don't look down. Just keep walking.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
But, yeah, the vertigo is real, and the danger is real. Your show is about it. Whenever you're on the air, you're talking about it in one way or another. And it's up to me as an artist in this city, a committed artist from Los Angeles, to try to put the mirror up. And the way I deal with it, at least with these two plays, is I give us a little sense of history, but I really do it so that we can look at our own moment and try not to make those mistakes.
And you leave it with the door cracked open for the future as well, which I thought is really important too, because you don't know where things are going to go at that point, you know. And I really enjoyed that. I really thought that was important.
Thank you.
Unfortunately, we are out of time, but we're going to have you back, man. I want to let people know that the play is, we've been talking with Oliver Mayer, and the play is members only. It's at the LATC, the Latino Theater Company. And basically, that is on Spring Street between 5th and 6th. And it's what nights?
It's on Fridays, Thursday, Friday, Saturday at 8 p.m., Sunday at 3, and we throw in an occasional Monday at 7:30.
All right. So
come out and see it, LA.
Yeah. And people can go to a website to find out more about it?
Yeah, latc.org.
Okay, great. All right. I want to thank you very much for joining us, man.
Thanks, Mike.
All right, take care. All right.